I'm Karen Hartblast. You're listening to It's All About Food. Woo! I'm happy to be here. And I'm here with, you know who, my favorite person, my favorite co-host, my favorite everybody, Gary DeMattei.
Hi, Karen. Welcome to It's All About Food.
So I'm still in Wisconsin.
And I'm still in California.
And we're here together with everyone on Zoom.
Yes, we are.
Isn't that nice? Yeah.
It's great to be back. Lots to talk about.
So much to talk about.
I know. So the world is crazier and crazier. We're here to give people some truth and tools for a healthy lifestyle, right?
And maybe a little sanity.
Maybe a little
amongst
sanity.
Amongst the insanity of it all.
That's right. So if you've visited our website, you know who we are. We do recipes. We do podcasts. We give you lots of information about how to live a healthy, happy, plant-based lifestyle in a world that doesn't want you to live a happy, healthy, plant-based lifestyle.
It's really hard to know what the world wants. It really is. And it's really hard for everyone to understand the big picture because so many people are sheltered in their own life and they may perceive things they see around them, violence and poverty and problems and people disagreeing with them, and they'll take a side without stepping back and seeing the big picture and understanding how we got to this place. And this is the most dangerous thing, I think, that is happening today on this planet. I might pick up on this topic later on,
right?
Because I got something bugging me. But the first thing I wanted to talk about, Gary, is last week was the Food Revolution Network Summit.
How did that go, Kara?
Yeah, it goes every year. And I am one of the fortunate people who gets to work with the Food Revolution Network. And my job over the last decade has been to be present during the 3 hours of interviews where Ocean Robbins is hosting and John Robbins is interviewing the latest experts in food and nutrition. People are posting questions on the page, the broadcast page, and I am answering as best I can the nutrition questions.
Oh, that's exciting.
Well, you can't really dig very deep because there are a lot of people. The questions are flying by very quickly. And after the Food Revolution has been doing this for so many years, they have a lot of blog posts that basically address a lot of the questions that people have. So what I do is I link their blog posts, and they're pretty good. When the Food Revolution was getting started with their summit, I used to link Dr. Furman's posts, but now I link Food Revolution's posts unless I can't find something. And then I might go to Dr. Greger's site or for Dr. Furman's, or just tap into my old noggin and say
right,
something.
You have a lot of knowledge in that noggin of yours.
I got a lot of stuff in here, but I think people prefer if you link to something that they can go to and see references and is well thought out.
People,
okay, all of that's good.
People do love links, hot links.
Hot links. Yeah. A few years ago, the big question was about lectins. And everybody was up in arm about lectins because there was a book out by Dr. Stephen Gundry that was telling us stay away from beans and all these foods that have lectins because lectins are a toxin. And then a bunch of articles came out, said he doesn't really know what he's talking about and the references aren't very good in his book. And you don't have to worry about lectins because the foods that have been shown in all kinds of studies that promote longevity and low risk to disease and health, quality of life, are foods that contain lectins. It's not really a strong argument to say avoid lectins because lectins, which are in beans and other foods, are good for us. I brought it up because there weren't that many questions about lectins this year.
Really? So what are some of the foods in addition to beans that you find lectins?
Ah, that's a good question.
For someone who's not sure what a lectin is, what is it?
Right. Lectins are a protein. They naturally occur and they're found in most plants. But there are some foods that have more lectins than others, like beans and peanuts, tomatoes and potatoes, eggplant, fruits, wheat. All the stuff we eat, grains, they're in everything pretty much. It's important with beans to cook them. A lot of that cooking breaks down the lectin, so it's not as problematic. But our bodies are meant to manage a certain amount of toxins.
Sure.
And it makes us stronger. The problem is a lot of people are eating so many foods that are just so bad for them, and they're filling up their body with more toxins than the body can handle, that they have all kinds of diseases and inflammation. Lectins aren't something to worry about. That's just the bottom line. If you don't believe me, you can send me an email at info@realmeals.org and I will send you links, hot links, to some really wonderful detailed articles explaining why lectins are okay. And Dr. Stephen Gundry's book had a lot of flaws.
Very good. Another myth dispelled here on It's All About Food.
Yeah. And then
that's what we do. We do a lot of that. We do a lot of myth breaking. We're myth busters.
But we can only go so far. I did not find that there was one hot issue that people were asking about. There were many people who came to the summit and had physical problems. They had either some sort of autoimmune disease, like rheumatoid arthritis. Some people had diabetes. Some people had a myriad of problems just layered on top of each other. And that was kind of sad to see, because you want to help them, but you don't know them and there's no time. And that's not what this is all about. So you send them a link and you hope they see it and discover something from it.
Right.
But all in all, I think the program was very informative.
Who was one of your favorite?
George Montbiot.
Who is George Montbiot?
Yes. First, I want to say that one of the reasons I like him, this may be silly, but he has a British accent. It just makes hearing about all of the things that he talks about, which are really, really powerful, more palatable, because it's just so pleasant listening
right.
to him.
he makes the terror seem less terrible when he speaks.
Yes, but he has a website, montbiot.com. That's MONBIOT.com. He writes for The Guardian. He has many categories on his website that he covers. And during the summit, he was talking a lot about climate breakdown or climate catastrophe. And one of the things that I learned in this summit from George Montbiot, but also from Andrew Kimbrell with the Center for Food Safety, he spoke as well. And they both are framing problems with specific vocabulary. So George Montbiot doesn't use the word climate change. We used to call it global warming, and then politics got involved and kind of wanted to make it sound less scary, so they called it climate change. And he's calling it climate breakdown or climate catastrophe, because
right.
it's a big problem. And then Andrew Kimbrell, he was advising that instead of calling the toxic chemicals that we put on our plants to grow them, like pesticides and herbicides, he calls them biocides. And from now on, I'm using the word biocides. So if you ever hear me say pesticides and herbicides again, correct me, because they're biocides. And what does that mean? Biocides, bio, they kill life. They kill living things.
And they kill the soil, which has living things in it.
The soil, when it's healthy, has so many organisms. It's a vibrant, active, incredible place.
Right.
And if our soil was healthy all over the planet, we wouldn't be talking about climate catastrophe.
Right. And that's a thing we have a tendency to overlook, what we're doing to the soil, how we're depleting the soil. That's really a big part of it.
Yeah. So the summit was good. And if you haven't experienced the Food Revolution Network Summit, you might spin over to their website. Check it out. You can always buy their empowerment package, which contains all the interviews. I don't profit from them. I'm just letting you know.
Excellent. You liked George Montbiot. You liked what he had to say. Anybody else?
Well, I just wanted to say that he brought tears to my eyes.
Oh.
Because he was speaking scientifically. He was very articulate. And he was heartfelt. And he just expressed all the things that are going on, all the things that we're not doing. And even though he did it with a lovely British accent,
right,
it just brought it out. Now, I know these things. And what I tend to do is just shove them all down, because I want to live as best the life I can. And if I'm thinking about all the problems that are going on, I'm going to be depressed all the time. And I'm not going to be productive. at even doing my part to make this world better. You can't be depressed, but just listening to him, it just brought all of it right to the fore, and it was intense.
Yeah, and if people want to know more about George, as you mentioned, they can go to his website. And he's also the author of several books, which all look fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Regenesis, Feeding the World Without Devouring the Planet. How Did We Get Into This Mess is another book. They Knew, the U.S. federal government 50-year role in causing the climate crisis. There's another one called Feral. Feral looks fascinating. It's called Feral, F-E-R-A-L, Rewilding the Land, the Sea, and Human Life. Mm. Of course, you can find all of these books online. Check out George. Who else did you like?
Yeah, well, I mentioned Andrew Kimbrell for the Center of Food Safety, and he was also very good. They have a number of different campaigns regarding the soil and organic and food safety and biocides, as I mentioned before, and genetic engineering.
If you want to know more about the Center for Food Safety, you can go to centerforfoodsafety.org. They're a nonprofit advocacy group based in Washington, D.C., which also has an office in San Francisco. And as Karen just mentioned, Andrew Kimbrell is their executive director.
Definitely. I've heard him before. They've brought him back a number of times. There was Doug Evans, who spoke about the magic of sprouts. And, you know, I think he got a lot of response. People were very excited to hear about sprouting.
And you love sprouting.
I do. And I was surprised at how many people were excited about what he had to say about them. Broccoli sprouts, for example, are just a powerhouse.
Yeah, Doug Evans has a lot of videos on YouTube too, so you can check him out. He's got one, The Best Way to Improve Your Nutrition. Obviously, the one that Karen just spoke about, Doug Evans on the power of sprouts. There's a video out about that. Surviving Juicero and Thriving on Sprouts. So there's a lot of really great information about Doug Evans. Check him out. Karen likes him. That means you should get to know Doug Evans and like Doug Evans too.
The one person I think who got the best response was Brooke Goldner, MD. And she's all about autoimmune disease. And she's somebody I should invite on the program. She's delightful. Yeah. And she cured herself of lupus. And now she helps many of her patients with autoimmune disease. And it's just one of those classic stories where you're a medical doctor and you have a problem and you find that conventional medicine that you believe in and you've been trained in is not solving your problem. And then you have to dig and, oh, look, you discovered that nutrition really makes a difference and you learn nothing about it in school.
Yeah. So I like her picture too. She's standing there, big smile on her face, and she's holding a green juice. Now, who doesn't love somebody that holds a green juice in their promo picture? It's really a cool shot. And I know that must mean she's a big proponent of green juicing, right?
Yes. I don't know specifically what her protocol is for autoimmune disease.
Called Goodbye Lupus. We like that.
Yeah, she has a book, Goodbye Lupus, and that's also her website, Goodbye Lupus.
And Goodbye Autoimmune, fascinating.
Yeah, so many people have autoimmune diseases today, and of course, most of the medical community has no idea what to do about it, but there are a number of doctors that are having success with their patients and turning autoimmune diseases around.
And this is a segue there because one of the things she's written a book about are green smoothie recipes. We like green smoothies and we talk about those a lot. On our website, we have some recipes for smoothies and they're really wonderful, but get into making smoothies, right?
Yeah. So really there's important. Different opinions about smoothies. I like them. There are some people like Dr. Susan Pierce Thompson, who doesn't encourage smoothies, and a few others who feel like they get digested too quickly.
Right.
But it's important when you're having a smoothie to not guzzle, to hold it in the mouth so that you allow your digestive juices in the mouth to get started digesting, and then you can swallow it. And you just consume it slowly. It's not something you want to drink very quickly. The same thing with a green juice. you don't want to consume it very quickly. It's so loaded. You have to consume it slowly. But people that have autoimmune diseases have a really hard time consuming fiber. And we need fiber. It's like one nutrient that most people don't get enough of. But when their gut is so inflamed and has so many challenges, it's hard to consume fiber. So how do you get that balance? I know what Dr. Furman recommends. He recommends cooking and pureeing your food, your vegetables, cooking and pureeing, and learning how to consume vegetables that way when they're cooked and pureed, and also juicing, which removes a lot of the fiber. And that way you get the nutrition without the fiber that is harmful while your gut is needing to heal. And then over time, you're able to incorporate more food that isn't pureed and blended. And then you could have a smoothie that's blended still. And slowly your gut heals and you get back to a place where you can eat a lot of wonderful whole plant foods. You don't want to go back to eating processed foods and junk food and burgers and animals, because that'll throw your gut out of whack again. But there are ways to heal. And Brooke Gardner, I'm sure, has a similar protocol.
That's fascinating, because I have friends who tell me now that their bodies are breaking down, and it's very sad to watch, that they've just never eaten vegetables. They've never tried to learn to cook. They are at the end of their rope as far as what to do. They've seen doctors. Doctors have them on medication, but they've just flat out refuse to turn the corner and actually try and start incorporating vegetables into their diet. And this sounds like a really great way to get started, by cooking and pureeing your food, almost like going back to eating baby food, right? Small amounts of cooked and pureed food, and trying to incorporate that into your diet at a slower rate than maybe most people just decide. Like when I decided.
The other recommendation about eating beans, because people always bring up, I can't eat beans. That was a popular one. And that's a popular one that I've seen for years, because beans can give you gas and beans can bloat you. And if you have a particular problem with your gut, beans will be very difficult to digest, but they are so good for you. So what do? And the recommendation, it takes patience, but you can consume a very small amount of beans every day, maybe a tablespoon.
Right.
Enough, just a little bit, but enough so that you're not feeling any discomfort. Small enough amount that you can consume without discomfort. And from there, your body populates the bacteria that you need to digest the beans. And it's a slow process, and you increase more and more. And it's good to have a variety of different beans while you're doing this process. And then at some point, you can consume comfortably a half a cup of beans at a meal and go from there.
Right.
It does take time and patience and perseverance.
I know lots of people that do eat beans, and you and I can attest to this. I don't really experience any gas after eating beans. And I know it's probably because we soak our beans overnight and we do all of the things you're supposed to do to try and reduce the amount of gas that you will experience if you eat beans, and you don't soak them as long as we do. And there's all kinds of things. But isn't gas, and I know it's not socially acceptable, but isn't gas a sign that your body is working?
We're supposed to pass gas all day long.
Right.
Yes.
And so just because of that it's socially unacceptable for people to pass gas in public, which, you know, I can understand that. But a lot of folks have given gas a bad rap. Isn't gas a sign that things are okay? Things are doing what they're supposed to do. I mean, we should be passing gas. I know that when folks are in the hospital, the first thing after surgery they try to get them to do is pass gas. They don't release you unless you pass gas, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's like the nurse will come in and say, "Have you passed gas today?" And it's like, "No, I haven't passed gas." But and you can't go home until you pass gas. So folks, passing gas isn't such a bad thing. So maybe you need to rethink the whole idea of gas and start embracing beans.
I think the question is, how much gas? So you can be passing gas all day and you don't even notice. It's just little gentle puffs versus explosions.
Right. That would be more of me. I would be the explosion person.
That are accompanied with bloating, that right. uncomfortable bloating.
I and see. Yeah. So folks don't want to eat. A lot of folks don't want to eat beans because it's uncomfortable. It's painful. They're bloated.
When I eat too many beans, like sometimes I'm so hungry and I just eat tons of them, I will have that really full feeling and I might make more gas.
Right.
Definitely. So you have to watch the quantities too, I think. But something I just discovered, which I can't wait to share with you, Gary.
Oh, good.
Is when I cook the beans in the Instant Pot, when I pressure cook them, I soak yeah. them and then pressure cook them. And I think that helps with gas too.
Yeah, you're in love with your Instant Pot. We've talked about this before. I'm really happy to hear. So you've been sustaining yourself on a diet of berry bowls, right? You're doing bowls in the morning with berries. What else are you putting in them?
Well, it depends. So usually once a week on my day off, I'll make a lot of grain, one grain, and I'll make a bean. So I have them all week. Mm-hmm. So I might add a little grain to my berry bowl. I'll have strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, maybe apple, sometimes banana. Sometimes I'll add cashew yogurt or soy milk. I'll add flax seeds. And, mm-hmm. and some nuts, maybe. And that's my bowl. And last week I made buckwheat, which I was really in love with in the Instant Pot. That was really fun in the bowl.
Mm. Can't wait to try that Instant Pot. You're really getting me excited about it.
And then I just have these giant, did I say giant? Really big salads with beans and onions and mushrooms. And I put some frozen vegetables on them too, because I make it in the morning. And then by the time I'm ready to eat it in the late afternoon, everything has defrosted. I might put some blueberries and corn and frozen kale. It's a good salad, as my dad used to say. I normally like to make tahini dressing, but I'm all out and I haven't been able to find organic sesame butter at the local Pick and Save where I shop, but I have been using sometimes just plain apple cider vinegar, or I mix a little organic mustard with the cashew yogurt for a little creamy mustard dressing. Very
that
does, good.
That sounds very good.
Simple.
Yeah.
Simple and clean.
And those probiotics in the cashew yogurt are real good for your gut too. Speaking of gut, right?
That's right. Good bugs. Good speaking bugs.
Speaking of repairing your gut, that's a really important thing to keep in your daily diet is
the thing about the gut is if you're eating a whole food plant diet with little or no junk food or processed food, you're going to be providing prebiotics, which are certain foods that feed your probiotics and keep a nice balance and keep everything healthy. If you're eating a healthy whole food plant diet, you don't need to take probiotic supplements. You don't have to concern yourself because your body's in balance. Your gut is in balance. The foods that you're eating are taking care of all of the gut bacteria that you need.
Very important.
Yeah.
So that's breakfast. Now, lunch and dinner, you're making lots of soups and you're also adding some grains to your soup, right? You've got the big salad for lunch. You've got the berries and the bowl, maybe a little grain at breakfast and dinner. What are we doing for dinner now that you're on the road in Wisconsin understudying three roles in the church basement, ladies?
Three lead roles.
Yes.
Most of the time, the salad that I eat in the late afternoon fills me up for the day. Wow. I'm not even hungry for any more.
Yeah.
I might have some fruit or something in the evening or a couple of dates or something. And that's it.
You are making lots of soups though, right?
I just started last week making soup in my Instant Pot, hooray! I brought some herbs and spices with me. So I made a very simple, very wonderful soup. I put in onions, celery, dried shiitake mushrooms, maybe a quarter cup of lentils, not to make it a lentil soup, but the red lentils just kind of melt and make a nice flavorful broth. And then I used onion powder and turmeric and garlic powder and black pepper. Whew, and dill. I like a lot of dill in my soups. It brings me back to the old days when my grandmother and mother made chicken soup and it had a lot of dill in it.
Right.
I don't need the chicken, but I need the dill. So while we're on the subject of soup, I want to give just a very brief soup tutorial.
Some people have real issues with soup because they relate it to poverty. I have one friend who has many brothers and sisters, and when she was young, they were always served soup, and as a result, she doesn't like soup. It has too many negative connotations for her, and that really is unfortunate. And the soup that is associated with poverty very often is something that's very watered down and may have a lot of salt in it and not a lot of nutrition or flavor. And speaking of salt, most of the soups that you're going to find either in restaurants or commercially made and offered in stores is full of sodium. There are some options that are considered low sodium, but you have to really be careful and read the label because they still might have a lot of sodium. Why do people add sodium salt to soup? Because soup has a lot of water in it, and that kind of dilutes the flavor. And salt brings out flavor, or salt makes you think things have flavor. I just think salt makes things salty. But I don't consume salt, or I consume very little salt. So when you're making soup, there's always a number of things you can do to make a really flavorful broth and a flavorful dish. Certainly sautéing onions, celery, and carrots together first is like a foundation, the mirepoix. And some people will do it with oil. I dry sauté my onions, my celery, my carrots. For this particular soup that I just made, I didn't have carrots, so I used onions and celery. And then a lot of people like to use a bouillon, and there are even vegetable bouillons out there, but if you look at it, they have salt in it. So what I like to do is make my own sort of bouillon, which is just a combination of herbs and spices. I like to use a lot of onion powder. That's like at least a tablespoon or more with 6 cups of water. It just gives a nice flavor. What can I say? In addition to the fresh onions that I'm going to use, I'll add a little garlic. I'll add turmeric and black pepper. Why? Because they're so good for us. And not too much because turmeric can be bitter. You might have to play with the quantity that you use. I'll add maybe a half a teaspoon or a teaspoon, depending on how much soup I'm making, of the turmeric. And then there are some secrets. So I really like using mushrooms or mushroom powders. Now, as we know, Gary doesn't like mushrooms, although he's trying. But mushroom powders, for people that don't like the texture of mushrooms, this really makes a difference and great in soup. I had some shiitake mushroom dried that I brought with me. And it's funny because they were just little like cubes or pellets. I forget what they were called. Flaked. I don't know. They're not big chunks. And over time, they've been pulverizing themselves. So they're really like a powder now. And I just add a little bit of that, a few tablespoons, and it just adds that umami, that umami. Also, as I mentioned, I like to add a little touch of lentils. I don't want to make a lentil soup, but when you add a red lentil, you can call it a red lentil, a pink lentil, those light-colored lentils, they cook very fast, and they melt. They literally melt, and they enhance the flavor of the broth. And then I like to add dill, but there are so many herbs out there. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, and herbe de Provence, which is a combination with basil and lavender. Some people like tarragon. I'm not a big fan of that, but maybe just a little bit with a mix of others could be good. And then something that Gary does is grinds them all up together in one of these food processors or in a seed mill. And pulverizing it all together helps it blend better in the soup. You could do all of this in advance, like make a jar of your favorite seasonings all blended together, and then just add a few tablespoons when you're making soup. Or you could do it like I do it, just adding things on a whim. Oh, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But don't forget the mushroom powders. Don't forget the little bit of lentils. That really flavors up the broth, and a lot of onion powder. That's my soup tutorial.
You know, speaking of substituting things like chicken, still having what the base is there, we went to dinner the other night, celebration of my nephew Josh's birthday, and went to a very nice restaurant, but they were limited in what they had on the menu as far as what I could eat. They did have one vegan dish. It was like an artichoke salad. So I got that as an appetizer. Then I said, well, what else could I get? You know, is there anything else that the chef could do? And here I thought they would be amenable to my request and make me whatever I wanted, but they weren't. They said, well, we have this one item that another vegan came in and we did for them, and that is we had this octopus. We have this octopus dish, right? And so it's octopus and it's on a bed of beans and some other vegetables and a couple of sweet potatoes, slices of sweet potatoes. And I said, oh, that sounds great. And she said, yeah, and we could then take the octopus off of that and just serve it to you like that. I said, well, are you going to like put the octopus on and then take it off? Because I don't want any trace of the octopus on the food. She said, no, he'll just make the dish and not put the octopus on. And I said, okay, so does it have any like fish sauce or anything on it? And she said, no, it's just this citrus sauce. Basically, what it was two slices of sweet potato, some really large white beans. I don't want to say they were fava beans, but they could have been. They were those big, huge white beans that we've had before from
Butter beans, maybe.
maybe butter beans. Yeah. There were seven or eight butter beans. There was two slices of sweet potato. There was some little chopped, sauteed, I guess, bits of greens. So I had that as well. And it was really interesting that that was the one dish without the octopus that I could have.
It's so sad that we serve octopus on menus. So
I
sad.
almost felt bad about getting anything because of that.
I want to remind people why I'm here and why I do this. I do it first for the animals. It's just a bonus that the way I eat is the healthiest for humans and the best for the planet. But I do this because I don't believe in torturing, exploiting, or killing animals, other living beings. I
Or
watched
it.
three documentaries recently.
Yeah, this is a good segue into that, which was our next topic, is what have you been watching? We know now what you've been eating, but tell us what you've been watching, because I know it's been pretty heavy material.
So the first one is the most recent, although I watched it maybe a month ago or so. And that's a documentary called Cow. And I believe it was at the Sundance Film Festival this year. I think it came out in April. It's a film with very little talking. The camera person followed a cow that lived on a farm where the people were raising cows for their milk and for their meat. You want to tell us the storyline, Gary, about the movie Cow?
Yeah, it's basically the film is an endeavor to consider cows, to move us closer to them, to see both their beauty and the challenge of their lives. Not in a romantic way, but in a real way. It's a film about one dairy cow's reality and acknowledging her great service to us. And
Well,
then.
they did a great job filming this because you got really close in all kinds of intimate situations. And you always got to see the cow's eyes. And
Very
I don't know
powerful.
how anybody could see this film and not feel for this cow.
Very
I like to
powerful.
say, I like to say a lot that we relate more to one being story rather than hearing all the numbers that, 10 million, 10 billion of such and such an animal is killed every year and slaughtered. The numbers just blow us away. And so when we follow one story, it's just really, really powerful.
And to have very little dialogue and to just watch the daily life of this dairy cow must have been devastating.
You see, in the beginning, she's giving birth to a calf, and you see what happens. You see how they manipulate her. You see how they take the calf away. You see how they feed the calf through a bottle rather than from her udders, which I don't even think she could feed her calf from her udders because they're so enlarged. And it's really difficult to watch. And then you can see her crying for her baby. and
Right.
looking all over for it.
What a heartbreaking movie.
It is
Now,
heartbreaking.
are people going to stay away from it because it's so heartbreaking?
I don't know if people know what they're going to get into when they watch this. And what's interesting is you really don't see any violence. So I've seen some other footage where the humans that are raising the animals are beating them and insulting them, really doing nasty things. This doesn't really happen in this particular farm, but still, you see an animal that wants to live her life in a natural way, wants to raise her children, wants to be with her friends, wants to be out in the open, and doesn't want to be providing for people. So on a day-to-day basis, they're milked, and you see how they're put into these spaces and hooked up to these machines that milk them. It all looks so filthy. These animals have been trained to do this, and they just do it.
Right.
I think everyone should see it just because it's a quiet, peaceful movie that shows you the reality of the milk.
That's fascinating. I can't wait to see it.
You see the cows eating at a trough. You see the farmers. There's a handful of them, a few women and men. And what's really creepy is sometimes there's country music in the background. So it's like the soundtrack of the film, but it's actually being played on the farm.
So you know me, I'm all about quotes, and to just kind of recap what you just said about how the cow doesn't want to be of service to the human, the cow wants to live its own life, be left alone. There are three quotes, and you know me in quotes, that I want to read on that note. So one of the quotes by the Dalai Lama, "I do not see any reason why animals should be murdered for food or any other reason. After all, there are so many substitutes. Men can live healthier with plant foods." Okay, that was the Dalai Lama. And Alice Walker, the author of For the Color Purple, "The animals of the world exist for their own reasons. They were not created for men any more than black people created for whites or women created for men." And then Dick Gregory, who, as you know, was an activist and also a writer and comedian and poet and actor and so many other wonderful things. "All animals, human and non-human, suffer and die alike. Violence causes the same pain, the same spilling of blood, the same stench of death, the same arrogant, violent, and brutal taking of life. We don't have to be a part of it."
Sometimes quotes say it all.
It's very disturbing to see these films, and I just know that a lot of folks won't watch them, just like a lot of folks know that, you know, they shouldn't be contributing to this horrible way we raise animals and kill them and then eat them, but they look the other way. And
I just want
so.
to add that you see in this film, you see the farmer, you see the vet, you see them shoving their fist up the back of the cow and either testing her with an ultrasound or injecting her with something or testing if she's pregnant. This is one particular situation where they don't artificially inseminate. What happens is they put a bull in the pen with the cow when she's ready, and the bull just does it, quote, naturally. But they're all very happy when the cow gets pregnant because, as you know, you cannot have milk unless you make a cow pregnant. And you make the cow pregnant, you take away the calf, you kill the calf for meat, or you raise the calf to become another milk-giving animal. And then you take the milk from the mother. And you have to keep her pregnant. You have to keep her pregnant and bearing calves so that she'll be able to give milk so that we can steal it from her. And then I don't want to say what happens at the end of the film, but I think you can guess. What's very powerful about it is you see this daily routine of what happens in the life of this one cow, and then the routine of her ending.
Oh, that's a spoiler alert. But we all know what's going to happen anyway, right?
Yeah. So then the next film I saw, this is a
Yes.
film that I bought a few months ago. They're trying to kill us. And I wasn't able to watch it until recently. And I'll confess, I could not watch it in one sitting. There was just too much Too
Right.
difficult, too
Very heavy.
painful.
A brief synopsis of the movie is They're Trying to Kill Us is a new groundbreaking documentary from executive producers and seven-time NBA All-Star Chris Paul and seven-time Grammy winner Billie Eilish. The film features notable influencers from the fields of hip-hop, medicine, sports, entertainment, policy, and politics, weighing in on the singular most deadly threat to American society that mainstream media doesn't want to talk about. So tell us about the film, Karen.
There's a lot of elements in the film, but basically, we learn that the areas where we have a big population of people of color or indigenous people, they don't have access to healthy food. There are more gun stores, there are more liquor stores, there are less grocery stores and more fast food. And they offer a premise that companies intentionally put these particular types of businesses in where there's poverty, where there's people of color, where there's indigenous people to kill them or to keep them unhealthy. And what's fascinating about us is there's many people today that will say, oh, the black people in our community, they're so violent, they're stealing, they're doing this and that. And they don't step back, which is what I wanted to talk about earlier. You need to step back away from where you are. You need to step back and see the big picture. So there are people that are living in poverty. They don't have access to healthy food. We know that when you don't eat healthy food, it affects your behavior. It affects your growth. So children that aren't growing with healthy food, it's going to affect their cognitive behavior. And this has a detrimental impact on communities. And there are people that are trying to change this, but it's fascinating that more gun stores are in these impoverished areas than in more well-to-do communities. So you see all of this in the film, which is narrated by many people of color. And you also see a number of other things. The one thing that really got me was this pig farmer in North Carolina. And I was very impressed that they were able to interview this particular man and see his farm, because more and more these farms don't want animal people filming their locations because we show how horrible they are and it can negatively impact their business. Well, this guy didn't seem to care much about anything, and he was happy to show his pig farm, and you could see all the pigs crammed inside the farm and they're living in filthy conditions. You can see the floor that the pigs are walking on, it's kind of grated because they poop, and the poop just kind of goes underneath. And I forget how often he said they cleaned it, but it's not often enough. And then, of course, the poop goes out to these lagoons, and the lagoons smell. And there were some interviews of people that lived nearby and how awful the smell was sometimes. And it's not just the smell, but the air is polluted. It's dangerous. So this particular farmer, at one point, they said when his microphone was off, but he was still talking on the camera, he acknowledged, this is at 1 hour into the film. If you're going to watch the film, just know this is coming, because I found it really difficult to watch. But he said he had killed people the first half of his life growing tobacco for cigarettes.
Right.
And now he was killing people by destroying the air and water in the community by raising pigs. And he said, there's nothing illegal in what I'm doing. And that's just the way it is. He didn't seem to mind. It
Yeah.
was chilling because so many people don't
Wow.
even want to admit to that what they're doing is bad. He didn't care.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, that'll be another film that I'm looking forward to watching, becoming very depressed. But no,
Well,
it's from director John Lewis. Audiences are really loving this film. Everyone who sees it is just saying it's a real life changer. I've read a lot of great reviews about the film. I think everybody should see it. Like you said, it needs to be seen in small doses, maybe. So if you can stream it over a period of a few nights, because there's a lot of devastating information here, which will change lives. The co-director is John Lewis. The explanation is he crosses the country seeking answers to why Americans of color suffer from disproportionately higher rates of chronic disease than their European American counterparts, while examining the intersections of food, disease, race, poverty, institutional racism, and government corruption. Through interviews with cultural influencers, doctors, researchers, politicians, attorneys, professional athletes, activists, and experts in the field of food justice, John begins to unravel a story of collusion that has kept millions of Americans sick, while the industries responsible make billions of dollars. The film follows John as the protagonist and narrator in the documentary because of his unique experience being adopted at birth from his drug-addicted birth mother, growing up as an overweight kid in the violence of Ferguson, to becoming a prominent health and wellness advocate promoting compassion. So that's, in a nutshell, what the film is all about. And again, if you read the comments, people are just really not only devastated by this film, but just think that it's a real game changer, as it were. Forgive me for using
It's co-produced by Keegan Coon, who did What the Health, Cowspiracy, and Seaspiracy. And I also noticed in the credits that some of the research was done by Eunice Wong.
Eunice, who was also involved with Keegan in
What the Health?
What
She
the
did
Health,
the
right?
book for What the Health, yeah.
And I know one of your friends is in the film, Dr. Michael Greger is
Yes,
filmed.
and Dr. Milton Mills is in the film quite a
Dean
bit.
Ornish.
And Dr. Michelle McMaken, she's
Right.
lovely. And very articulate.
They're all just great folks. Dr. Alan Goldhammer and Billie Eilish, who is, everybody knows who Billie is. She's also doing some great work as a producer now, helping get this thing out there.
The
Just.
last one I wanted to talk about is a film from 2019, although I thought it came out later than 2019, but maybe not. It's been a long time and we had the pandemic and I just lost track of things.
Right.
But it's definitely worth watching. And you get a lot of history in this film. It's very chilling. And the thing is, I know some of the people that are in this film that ended up going to jail.
What's the name?
The Animal People.
The Animal People.
The Animal People. A little over 20 years ago, 25 years ago, there was a growing movement of activists against animal testing. And there was one company in particular, Huntington Labs, that was being targeted in Great Britain and then in the United States. And there were a group of activists called SHAC, Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty. And the film talks about them and their journey and their motives. And one thing led to another, and there was some violence that occurred, some property that was damaged. Nobody was ever hurt. And the SHAC people will tell you that that was not their motivation, that they had nothing to do with any property being damaged or people being harmed, that there were some other people underground that were involved. But they were slapped with the blame, and six of them ended up going to federal prison for 2 to 4, maybe even oh, up to 6 years, I don't know. They're all out now, and they participated in this documentary. It's really very compelling. You learn about corporate power. You
Right.
learn about the justice system, which may not always be just. You learn
Yeah.
about free speech and
Right.
how fragile free speech is. And I think it's really important to see this film just to learn about the
Yeah.
dynamics of the culture we live in.
The storyline is 15 years in the making. This feature documentary, executive produced by Joaquin Phoenix, follows the journey of six young Americans who find themselves targeted as terrorists by the U.S. government for their involvement in a controversial protest campaign. Seeing the future of social movement organizing, the activists used the then fledgling internet to dramatically magnify their impact as they systematically knocked out the pillars of financial support that kept the company in business. But when letter writing and protests began to mushroom into dead of night vandalism and worse by unknown activists, this corporation and the government formed an alliance to destroy the group. The FBI began an unprecedented campaign of surveillance in preparation for prosecution, creating a model that would later be used against Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter. Congress, under corporate influence, rewrote laws and bent the definition of incitement in order to accomplish the prosecution of these six, potentially weakening free speech rights for all Americans. Featuring expansive interviews with the activists spanning over a decade, rare archival footage, including never-before-seen FBI undercover surveillance tapes, wiretaps, and government documents, The Animal People is a chilling portrait of what happens when activism rattles the institutions of power. And some of the reviews of this have been just tremendous. People are saying that it's gut-wrenching and infuriating. Why aren't we talking more about this movie? And now we are here
That's
on.
why we're talking about it. What's
We are.
especially difficult for me is that I know someone personally I'm close with who was on the corporate side.
Right.
And this person agrees with everything that happened, the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act that was put into law, which I personally think is a disaster and
Right.
a precedent that is very dangerous for our society. Calling these animal activists terrorists is just so unjust because they're not terrorists. And to begin with, what they're trying to do is stop the horrific cruelty and violence to animals, especially in laboratories. And if you've seen some footage of some of the things that have happened that are still going on today, unfortunately. It's very difficult to fathom. And
It's gut-wrenching.
one of the clever things that they did was they would go to people's homes of top executives of companies either directly involved with Huntington Labs or investing in Huntington Labs or using Huntington Labs services, like a pharmaceutical company that would use them. And they would go to the top executives and they would protest around their home with megaphones and posters. And they weren't doing anything illegal, but it was scary for the people inside
Sure.
because they had families and they were afraid for their children. And
Sure.
for those people, I could understand how they thought that these protesters were terrifying and using the word terrifying and terrorist for what they were doing because they were traumatizing their children. But if you go through changes that have been made through history, how are changes made? Changes are never made, unfortunately, by people being nice and saying, hey, can you stop doing this because it's not really very nice? Unfortunately, sometimes things have to get violent.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part is that there are some innocent folks that get caught in the crossfire, as it were, trying to make change for a positive. The label of terrorists on someone that is trying to stop terror. I don't
Yeah.
know, that's kind of.
There's just too much corporate power manipulation, and this is an excellent documentary to understand
Well, Karen, this has been another really light show with you today. Very, very
Hey,
light.
wait a minute.
And,
First, we talked about making wonderful healthy food, berry bowls and salads, and using
And we
the
talked.
Instant Pot. All of that was fun and light and lovely and delicious. But to know why we do what we do, we have to
Yeah.
share that.
No, I'm being facetious, as it were. Another wonderful show. I think it's time we wrap it up. Let's end it on an upbeat note. I've been doing a lot of eating in restaurants, as you've been doing a lot of cooking, I was able to go to Dharma's several times on this trip. I just wanted you to know that Dharma's is still alive and well and
Yay!
making the gardener salad, which you basically are making every day for yourself in Wisconsin. I was eating it at Dharma's in Santa Cruz.
The secret ingredient to the gardener salad, which I don't have here, are sunflower
Sprouts.
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 Sunflower
I was just going to
sprouts.
say, because we talked a lot about really great things on this program too, as far as food is concerned, and sprouts was one of them, and I've been eating a lot of sprouts. And remember, I never really liked sprout
Well,
candy.
if you want to learn how to like sprouts, I recommend trying sunflower sprouts first
Yeah.
because they have a very fatty, rich,
Meaty.
complex, meaty flavor.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's
they do.
not too grassy. It's a more rich flavor.
Yeah, and that's why our sunflower seed encrusted dishes that we've made, thanks to your invention of the sunflower seed encrusted,
Tofu,
anyway,
tempeh, whatever.
zucchini,
But
I think,
the
onion.
sunflower seed, it's not the same as a sunflower seed sprout.
No,
The
but
seed is sprouted, but the flavor is very
you
similar.
mentioned it has that meaty kind of, and the sunflower seed is very meaty. It's very dense, and so it really is a marvelous food. And on that note, go out and buy some sunflower seeds, raw, of course, or as your
Or
mother would
grow
say,
them.
as your mother would say, roar and sprout them.
Excellent. Okay. So here we are, Karen Hartglass and Gary DeMattei. We're the co-founders of Responsible Eating and Living. You can find us at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Send emails at info@realmeals.org. We're here for you if you have any questions about how to prepare a dish or if you have a favorite dish that isn't vegan and you want it vegan. We always love doing that.
Or if you just want us to depress you with some truth about what's going on in the world and how your food gets to your plate, just drop us a line.
Drop us a line.
Yeah,
Hey, Gary, it's so good to see you, and I can't wait to see you in person sometime later this month.
yes, I
Safe
can't wait.
travels.
I can't wait to see you either. And have fun in Wisconsin, and I'll talk to you again when I'm back in New York
On the other side.
on the other
All right,
side.
everybody. Have a
Have a
delicious
delicious
week.
week.